Welcome back to Curb Your Podcast. Curb Your Podcast is a part of the DVR Podcast Network. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com, and you can also support the pod, get early access and all kinds of special stuff. Become a patron. Go to patreon.com/DVR. So we are back for episode 2 of season 9, The Pickle Gambit. But before we do that, Sean, I want to check in with you. Did you get up at the Comedy Store? How was your other show? How is life as a comic in LA going for you?
It's okay. We'll start last week. I did the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. It's part of the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club contest, part of the Ventura Harbor or Ventura Comedy Festival or whatever. And there was 18 comedians on this show. My slot was number 16. So, yeah. So by the time I got up on stage, people had left. People had been thrown out of the comedy club. So the audience that was left was really just a handful of AARP members. And that is not my audience. So... It went okay. Like I opened up and I just kind of was just commenting on how like this guy had gotten thrown out, and it was hilarious. And I was like, I pointed out, I was like, you know, that was the funniest thing that has happened tonight. So, and then I went into my really offensive material, and older people don't get it and they don't like it. So it didn't go great, but it wasn't horrible. And then after me, this girl got on stage and was literally humping the air and getting laughs. So as a snooty stand-up comedian, I was just like rolling my eyes. And I remember at the end, they were like, all right, we're going to tally up the votes. And I just turned to someone. I was like, I just want to fucking leave. I was like, I just don't want to be an asshole. And then she was like, oh, it's too late for that. And then... So that was okay.
It's great, man. Sounds like you're having a blast at these things. There's like a continuing theme here, Sean, is that, you know, Woody Allen had a famous saying. What did he say again? It's like 80% of life is just showing up or something like that. Yeah, you got to stick around, you know, club, you're too. Right. You got to stick around. I was listening to the last podcast and I was thinking to myself, you've got to do that thing that you were describing, that donkey thing or whatever, where they
the
all
donkey make, thing.
You said that at the comedy store.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I went back to the comedy store this week and I didn't get on. There was like even more comedians than usual there, and but it was all right. It was pretty cool actually because I ran into a friend from North Carolina. He's actually. When he was going to school out at Duke when I was home for those couple years, and he's a comic, and I ran into him, and him and his girlfriend took me to this show in downtown LA because none of us got on the Comedy Store list, and we went to the show in downtown LA, and it was awesome because there were all these like fairly big comedy names on it, and the show was free. I can't remember the show, but. Is at a place called Cranes, and Kyle Kinane was on the show, Taylor Tomlinson, and Joe DeRosa, who just had a Comedy Central half hour come out. And it was actually Joe DeRosa. I had never seen him before. I'd heard the name like so many times.
Yeah.
And he was just, he was freaking great. And that was actually really cool. And then actually the host of the show, like, my friend who brought me, he knows a lot of people, and I don't know anyone, and he introduced me to the hosts and the producer of the show, and they actually invited me back to the green room afterwards to like meet and talk to everybody. He's like, oh, he's like, you're a comedian, you come back here and hang out with us. I was like, oh man, that's so awesome, because I just feel so alone in this comedy scene.
You feel so alone in the world, man.
I feel so alone.
We all do. Hey, but see, that's awesome, right? You stuck around at the other one. You stick around to the end. That's something, man. I used to do that all the time. Actually, my good friend Mike, who's a podcaster on the DVR Podcast Network. He's covering The Deuce with Jason Bailey on The Deuce Rethread. I used to want to leave everything all the time early. I'm just like you, bro. I don't like hanging out with people like that. You know, I do it and I'm out. I do what I'm there for. Yeah. You know, I don't understand the chit chatting and all that. I just want to do it and go. And he would always be like, nah, dude, stick around. And then the more I stuck around, the more I noticed is really that's when the things happen. It's not ever at the thing. It's that the sticking around afterwards, you know, when people are just hanging out. That's when you meet the cool people. That's awesome. Yeah, and all right, cool, man.
I need to do that, though. I need to go to more shows that I'm not like on and just, you know, talk to people. Yep. And, you know, and then, like, actually, last night I went and I did the Laugh Factory open mic, and they changed it a little bit. Whereas, like, it used to be you would stand in line a week beforehand and it would give out 15 spots, and you'd have to come back the next week to do it. But now they do it. It's like people get in line, they give the first 10 people slots, and then the rest of the slots is a lottery. And I showed up last night, like, right at the end, right as the doors closed, threw my name in the bucket, and I was actually a third person on stage. So it was pretty cool. Had a decent, they only gave you 2 minutes, which is, ooh, I find hilarious. I did 2 minutes and, almost all my jokes hit. Only my last one didn't hit. Cause I think I was literally trying to force it out. Cause I'd gotten the light already and it was flashing in the back. So I think, but it was cool because, a comic came up to me in the middle of the show and he had already gone. And, I thought he was great. And he came up to me and he was like, yeah, I really like this joke that you did. And it was the one at the end that didn't go over so well. And he was actually like, oh, maybe you could try it this way. And I was like, that's awesome. I was like, someone is actually talking to me. And then I was like, somebody is actually talking to me. Give me good feedback.
You're like awakening, dude, to see where, like, this podcast is great. We're not only talking about Curb, we get to see the awakening of this comedic genius of Sean Flynn.
You're too nice.
I love it, baby. I love it. All right. Well, that's what we got from Sean. That's awesome, dude. I love checking in on that, man, because this is where this is happening. But let's get on to the show, dude. We had a great episode. Well, you know what? I'm not going to say that. I normally would just go right into a great episode. I felt that this episode and reading around, you know, some of the great critics that I love, like Alan Sepinwall, this was a little bit strained to me. I just felt like if ever Curb could have kind of a putting the pieces together, like a setup episode, I felt that's what this was. And the whole pickle thing, I guess I just didn't, I don't know, I guess I got the pickle thing. I don't know if I got, what were your overall feelings about this episode?
I thought it was okay. It started a little slow for me. I liked the cookie. The tongs and the cookie in the hotel. So, I mean, like, I felt like the first couple minutes, I liked how he, like, remarked to the prostitute in the beginning, and he's like, oh, you know, you should shop at Saks instead. And I was like, in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, I'd actually might be more interested in a prostitute if she wasn't dressed like a prostitute.
Yeah.
You know?
There's no denying every one of these episodes is comedic genius, and I love, there's so many awesome moments and characters, but I just felt that it was almost, we were talking a little bit before we recorded and you had remarked that it was like trying too hard to get the plot together.
Yeah. You know? I feel like,
which is not good for Curb. Like the plot should be like auxiliary.
Yeah, I think the plot I always feel like is the loosest thing, and yeah. I think it's the little nuances that between the characters and the situations that really drive the show. But I mean, I probably don't feel as strongly as you do in terms of it being forced. I feel like it started to play out a lot more at the end.
Okay, cool. All right, man. Well, you want to get into it?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it. All right. So start out, this episode is called The Pickle Gambit, season 9, episode 2. It was directed by the great David Steinberg, who, as many people probably should know, hopefully, Canadian comedian, actor, writer, director, author. He used to be on the Johnny Carson show all back in the day a lot. And he used to be actually kind of more public. But as he's gotten older, he's done more writing, directing and stuff like that. And but I know that he is a Canadian, like, I think he's like knighted or something. I don't know. He's just like, he's big in Canada.
They knight Canadians?
Yeah, I think they do.
I didn't know that.
Do they?
I don't. I mean, I have no idea.
I don't know. We have to get a Canadian. I have a friend that's a Canadian. I could ask him.
You know, what's hilarious is like, we don't know anything about Canada at all. We know so much about Mexico, but we know nothing about Canada.
We really should start knowing more, right? Yeah. As time goes on.
They're the biggest threat. They have money.
Blame Canada. No, well, we'll probably are going to be, you know, racing over there when the, when they come to get us for doing the Curb Your Podcast. But anyway, the episode's written by Larry, Jeff Schaefer, and interestingly, Justin Hurwitz. Justin Hurwitz was the guy who did the songs and the score for La La Land, and he also did the score for Whiplash. So he works with Damien Chazelle. And the reason why Hurwitz is writing for Curb is because when Hurwitz and Chazelle came to Hollywood, they worked as a writing team and they worked on The League. And Schaefer, who we learned last week, right? Longtime Seinfeld guy and Curb guy, created The League. So that's pretty cool. I thought that was a pretty cool connection. I like to look at that before we start the show. All right. Anyway, so we open an establishing of a hotel room, of a hotel, which is nice. We're getting in. I noticed that they did pull back, I feel, a little bit on this seemed to be shot a little bit more traditionally Curb. I didn't see as much flair in this episode as I saw in last week, but they're still moving the camera a little bit more. We have an establishing shot. Larry's hiding out from the fatwa, so we're continuing that. He's writing a note to the Ayatollah. Leon and Jeff arrive. They convince Larry to leave the hotel. And then Leon had a great line where he said, they'll cut your fucking hands off, your feet off. They'll put your feet in your back pockets, your hands in your front pockets, and carry your ass out like a piece of fucking luggage. I really like that. So this was fun. So we're back to, we see that this is going to continue, the fatwa, throughout the season, right?
Yeah. This is clearly the issue for the season.
I wonder that
and Cheryl dating Ted Danson.
Yes. Yes.
I can't believe you called that.
I know, man. I know. That was a good one. That was a good one. And it definitely, when we get to it, I'll talk about how I like the way they handled that.
Yeah.
So then we get to the scene where Larry gets dressed again in his Buck Dancer outfit, which I saw some people online complaining about. It's not that fun. I love it. I think he looks great. Do you think he looks good in this costume?
I mean, he's not supposed to look good. Like, you know what I mean? What's the deal? Like, is it supposed to be an accurate disguise?
I just kind of like it. I actually think it softens him up a little bit, you know?
He looks more hip, actually. Yeah, he looks way more hip.
He looks more hip. But I like the way that he's in the outfit, and then he starts talking to the... So this is when he talks to the prostitute, and he makes the point to her, which we were talking about earlier, that if she dresses better, she'll get better clients. And the great part about this is the way that he just kind of... She's like totally listening to him, right? They're just both being honest. He's so non-judgmental. And I thought that this actually was like a really funny little scene. And I think that it is true, right? Sean, when you get hookers, do you prefer that they dress well?
No comment. No, I do prefer a well-dressed hooker. Like, I saw my first Hollywood hooker a couple weeks ago on I guess it was Hollywood Boulevard or Sunset. I don't remember. That's where they hang out. And she looked just like, what's her name? Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman.
Really?
Like, you couldn't miss her. Like, she had the leopard print top. She had no pants on. Boots all the way up to her cooter.
I don't know. Is this really, you know, I can't say if this exists because we're actually running, it's funny, we're running a interview with a sex worker and advocate, Jinx Lierre, on our Deuce Rethread podcast. And not to go away from the comedy, we can have comedy, but she works more through the internet and traveling and all this kind of stuff. So when I saw the woman there, I liked that conversation with her, but then I started to think, like, in real life, whenever I was in a hotel and I saw a woman who I thought might be a prostitute, and I've not been approached when I've been in hotels, but if I thought...
That's because of the way you dress.
That's probably right. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny, but I also kind of think, like, you know, somebody should have told her that earlier, because I think that it does make sense. Larry makes sense.
Yeah. And it's true. Like, I think that, like, you know, if they didn't dress like prostitutes, people would be, their business would be better.
You got to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Da-dum-dum. So Larry goes to the front desk and we see Dean Dean, which, if you know from Community, it's Jim Rash. I love this guy. You know him?
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, I watched Community. I liked Community a lot. And he was, wasn't he the principal on Community?
Yes, he was. He was the dean. Dean Dean.
Yes.
That's what was his name. But this role... You
oh, that's what I meant. Dean, a principal. I'm sorry. I didn't sleep well last night. It's okay, I was busy having sex with a prostitute.
Really? All right, well, we'll talk about that on next episode. This, for me, was kind of like a very subdued role here for him. I expected him to be a little bit more outrageous. Usually he is. And I liked that he wasn't.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool. I was expecting him to be a little bit crazier. Now, when Larry's checking out, he tells him that not to tuck in. I like to tuck in. I disagree with Larry on this. What do you think?
I'm not a tuck in. I'm not.
Yeah, I don't do it at home, but I like it at the hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it makes me feel safer because I'm not in my own bed or something.
No, it's
you know?
Very constricting. It's very constricting. But I will say, I don't know. I mean, I had like the best sleep of my life in a hotel. When I first came out here, I had to stay in a hotel one night, and it was actually like this fairly expensive hotel. And everything was awesome in it, but like, you know, I mean, they always have the tight tuck in. I think it's different in a nice hotel than it is like at like a Days Inn where like the sheets are horrible. Yeah. But like in a nice hotel, it's a little bit different, but I haven't made my bed in 25 years.
I'm an obsessive. I make my bed as soon as I get out of it in the morning.
My last girlfriend used to make me make the bed, and it was like such bullshit because all I did was just pull up the duvet. That's all I did.
That's good, man. That's why it's there. You even know what it's called. So Larry, then a Buck Dancer, a.k.a. Larry, this is where they have the fight about the tongs. And Larry also complains that these are Pepperidge Farm remembers cookies. I love those. I like this scene. I thought this was pretty funny. This totally reminded me, this and the later scene totally reminded me of the double dipping scene from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Just the way he's kind of like looking around, he does it. Someone notices it, they have the conversation, and then it later escalates into even something bigger. I just felt that this was, in a way, a callback to the double dipping.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's food etiquette. And I like food, so, but I don't know. Like, it's kind of weird for me because, like, I don't really know. Like, I'll go down to, like, the Whole Foods here. And, like, since Whole Foods got bought out by Amazon, their prices have dropped. So, like, I'll go buy, like, a half a rotisserie chicken. And I'll sit outside of Whole Foods. And I'll eat the whole thing with my hands. And, like, I don't know if it's rude or not. But I do get looks. But it's sort of like taking the cookie with your finger. Because, like, hey, you know, if you got enough room, you know, without touching another cookie, go for it.
Yeah. I have to admit that sometimes I'm bad with the tongs, even when I'm taking, like, say, rolls, because I want to touch the roll to see if it's, like, already kind of bad, you know, or getting hard. So I always, sometimes I'll grab the tongs, and what I'll do is I'll do a wrap around where I'll wrap my hand and touch, like, while I'm tonging, almost touching and tonging at the same time to feel the roll. Yeah. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Tongs are unsanitary anyways, because, like, everybody touches the handle of the tongs.
Of course. So they're worse, right? They always do these studies that show that, like, it's worse to do that, to, like, have that spoon. Like, everyone should use a different spoon or something.
And
you know?
Like, adults do not wash their hands in the bathroom. I was in a bathroom last time. I was taking a leak before the Laugh Factory open mic last night, and I go in there. And I take a leak and I walk over the sink to wash my hands. And, like, as I had turned around, this guy walked out of the shitter and he walked straight through the door. And this guy in there, he looked right at me and he goes, "He didn't wash his hands." I was like, "I noticed. Trust me. I noticed."
That's nasty, dude.
Yeah, it's gross. And it, like, I've seen it twice in the last 2 weeks here in LA. And it's always like, it's always someone coming out of a shitter. And that's how people get, like, hepatitis and stuff like that too. Just so you know, because I know.
You are a nurse.
Yeah.
You know that shit, man. Oh, dude, I don't even want to think about that, bro. All right. So we're jumping ahead. Larry and Leon are at home. I like this scene. They're just kind of hanging out in the hallway for some reason. Well, we know why, because the doorbell is going to ring. The doorbell rings, and it's Funkhauser. I love this dude. Bob Einstein. Now, let me ask you a question. Also, a.k.a. Super Dave Osborne. Loved Super Dave's show, man. Loved it.
Yeah.
Do you know who his brother is, Sean?
You know, I have no idea. That's a great question. I've only known him as Super Dave, but go ahead and enlighten me.
His brother is Albert Brooks.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Really? I can see it. Wow. Never would have known that.
Yep. They are brothers. Albert Brooks is actually Albert Einstein. For real, dude. That's Albert Brooks' real name. Albert Einstein.
I didn't know that either. Yep.
Well, I loved it. Super Dave's great, dude. Do you remember Super Dave's show?
I do.
Okay, cool. That was great. For those of you who don't know, that was on Showtime, wasn't it? Wasn't that one of the first Showtime original shows?
I don't remember watching the show, but I think he did a lot of bits on Letterman, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he totally did. Yes, you're right.
That's how I know him, because I was a religious Letterman watcher for years.
That's
even
awesome.
When I was a kid. So, oh, dude, like, I'm telling you, like, even, like, the episodes, like, you know what I used to think was hilarious on Letterman was, like, when he was dropping the fruit off the side of the building. I just thought that was hilarious. Like, but
he was good at being so stupid. Yeah. David Letterman was great because he took it to high art, you know? It was, and I think in a way, too, that he was making fun of, like, Gallagher. And, like, you know, like when he would do those bits, right? Because he never took them seriously.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, man. He's great, dude. I would love to see him show up on Curb. Wait, wasn't he on one episode? I'll have to look that up, but I don't think he was. But that would be great. All right, so we get introduced to the jewel of the Funkhauser family, this little skinny Kenny kid who is somehow... Leon calls him Forrest Gump. But he's like a star pitcher. He's going to go to Stanford on a full scholarship. And Leon is pretty unimpressed. And he even asks him, which I thought was tremendous foreshadowing here, has he ever seen a titty? which I like.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, it's tremendous foreshadowing, and, but like, isn't that what you want to ask every teenage boy?
And the funny part about it is that Larry and Funkhauser, who later are going to give this kid a hooker, are Funkhauser's like, why would you ask a teenager that? He's a child. I thought that was pretty funny. Then we have a great scene where they eat some sandwiches. I like shit like this. This is what I'm talking about with this episode. I honestly could have had 5 minutes of Leon making sandwiches and then bullshitting and dropped a bit more of the plot.
Yeah.
You know? It was fun. It was funny. Even when he was like, Larry's got tons of shit in here, and he's like pulling shit out. Then comes the pickle thing. Now tell me about this pickle thing. Obviously, it ends with the kid getting his arm fucked up, little Funk, and they run out. And this was probably one of the worst acted but very funny scenes. Like, the kid's arm's getting mangled. He's like, I heard a crack. And Funkhauser, like, his face never changes, too, of course. He's just like, thanks, Larry. Now we have to go to the hospital. And they just kind of walk out. But I mean, is this supposed to be like a masculinity thing that they're fighting over the pickle jar?
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, I just like, I'm never really that person like to like be like, oh, I'll open it. I mean, yeah, I'm more like to sit back and let someone else do it.
Like, that's what I don't, I agree. I'm laughing because that's what I was kind of thinking. Like, that's why on the end too, when Larry can't help but to try to open the pickle jar. I mean, I get that is a part of him, but I also see a part where just be like, let that guy squeeze his hand like that. That's like, I get a cramp, you know, like when people, I can open a pickle jar, but I'm always kind of like, you get that thing where your hand is like stuck like that for a second after, you know?
No, I don't, because I never open pickle jars.
My wife loves pickles. So now we go to a great. This was fun. I like this, where Larry and Leon are just lamping. They're watching TV. Larry's complaining about being kept up all night. And then Leon has a very, this is really a little kernel of wisdom here. Larry says, it was you keeping me up all night. And Leon says, I didn't keep you up. That's just the normal shit I do. I really like that line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, why all of a sudden is he like, oh, it kept me up all night? Yeah, because, I mean, I picture Leon being up all night. I'm someone like that. I'm up all night. And I picture Larry going to bed at, like, 9.
But like, I like the attitude there, too, which is like, I didn't keep you up. You went to sleep.
Yeah, that's you know? True.
Like, I was that's doing true. Me, you were doing you. It's just kind of funny. It's a perspective, because I'd totally be like Larry, and I'd be like, well, you shut the fuck up. but then this ends with us getting the kind of thing which we're going to come back to, which is they have a conversation, and Leon is going to hire a guard for the house, because Larry feels unsafe. And we also find out that Larry forgot his pajamas at the hotel. The bell rings, and then we get the awesome Ted Danson scene. And I thought that this, the way they did this was great, because I thought that it might be like a season long thing of Larry scheming to go out on a date with Mary Steenburgen or Bergen, however the fuck you say it. But they went through it so quickly that I thought it was just hilarious, right? That she just
gave him the Heisman.
Yeah.
She was like, I don't think so.
And Ted Danson called it too. He's just so confident. And that's so Ted Danson like. You know what I mean? Like, he was just like, she's not good. There was not ever a point where it looked like Ted Danson was like threatened at all or upset that Larry was going to ask out his ex. He just knew she wouldn't go for him, so he didn't care.
It's weird because Ted Danson is like, his friend, but he's also his nemesis, because like yes. Ted Danson makes all the right decisions.
Yeah. I think Ted Danson, I think the real nemesis for this season is not the Ayatollah. I think Ted Danson is the Ayatollah.
Right.
That's what I think.
I automatically started thinking what's going to happen now? Because I mean, it's a done deal. Like he is dating Cheryl. Yeah. Oh, so where's Larry going to go from here?
And you know, there's going to be a whole scene where Leon's going to be like, how many times do you think they're fucking, Larry? You think you fuck her in the ass, Larry? Right?
And well, I loved how he was like, Cheryl doesn't like blowjobs. Just so you know.
Yeah, she's revolted by the penis. That was funny.
And Ted Danson's like, well, maybe that'll change.
Yeah, maybe that'll change. And the way he said that, too, he's like, yeah, it's probably going to change, Larry. Now, this was great. Larry pulls up to A La Boss, original best chicken, the scene of one of the best Curbs episodes ever, the Palestinian chicken. He's dressed as Buck Dancer, but her name is Shara, right? I don't think he says her name in the show, but I looked it up. She recognizes him. They have some deep anti-Semitic flirting, and then she agrees to help Larry and the fatwa. And they cut right from that to them fucking. And this scene was pretty hilarious, because I just love the way throughout this whole thing that they're just mixing all the hateful shit together. You know what I mean? Like, she's saying the anti-Jew shit, he's saying it, and then Leon at the end is yelling the anti-Muslim, get the Muslims out. And I think it's just kind of funny. It just shows the ridiculousness of it all. And at the same time, it's funny, you know?
Yeah. No, I liked how, when he they were, having sex, and he just kept saying, Trump, Pence.
Yes. Jared, Ivanka,
Kelly
Steve
Conway.
Bannon. Kelly yeah. Conway. That was hilarious. And it's I didn't really get, I was thinking about it. What's funny about it is he's reversing the role. And first you're thinking why is he say it just confuses you to the point of ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I thought it was fucking hilarious. And I love that he brings her back to the show too, because I like this calling back calling back the show itself. That's always awesome. And now this ends with Leon and the security guy whose name is SWAT. Of course, you know that JB Smoove came up with that name too. I bet you $20 he came up with that name. So then they take her out. So we find out that this was a little awkward to me, but it was kind of funny. What did you think about this?
I thought it was great, and I liked how he said at the end too. He's like, "I'm not even going to comment that you still have your glasses on."
I didn't catch that.
Oh, he said after when SWAT was pulling the woman out of the room.
Oh, that's hilarious.
He said, Larry, I'm not even going to say anything that you got your glasses still on while you're having sex.
That was so funny, dude. I like how open they all are about fucking and shit. Especially at Larry's age, I think it's hilarious. I think it's great. It's just like in the original Palestinian chicken when he was fucking her upstairs and Funkhauser was downstairs listening to him the whole time. It was just kind of creepy. And Larry didn't even care.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, how long you been down here? He didn't even give a shit. So, all right. What happens next? We have a weird scene where Larry calls it's a lot of foreshadowing. Larry calls the Iranian consulate and keeps getting interrupted by SWAT and Leon wanting soft towels. And I like the way both episodes where Larry and Leon just keep on telling each other to shut the fuck up or fuck you. They just keep on yelling at each other like that. And even when they do it, you can still see the love. But Larry gets kind of pissed off here. That was good acting on his part, I had to say.
Yeah. He was pissed.
What did you think about the velvety towels?
So, man, it's. I think he was right in a way. Like the velvety towels don't dry well.
I agree, dude. My wife loves them, and I fucking hate that shit. You need a towel. It doesn't have to be totally like crusty hard, but it needs to have a little. It needs to be tough. You know what I mean? Because you also want that to be able to kind of like rub the water off you. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, man. I don't know. But then, you know, it could be like a skin tone thing where like he was saying, because SWAT says that he was getting ashy. So I don't have that problem. I am ash. I am all white. I'm like translucent. So maybe it is that, you know?
I use quick dry towels.
You what? You use like the towels you use to dry off a car?
No. Not like what do they call those? Not a ShamWow.
Use a ShamWow.
Although I'm open to it. No, I went when I first moved here. I had these heavy towels and like, it was weird. Like my apartment's not well ventilated, so. Yeah, I'd leave in the morning. I'd come home at night. My towels are still wet. So I went to Bed Bath & Beyond and
you got some quick dries?
Got some quick dries.
Never heard of it, man. I'll have to look into it.
Have you ever been to Bed Bath & Beyond?
I used to work there, dude. And I used to fold all those motherfucking towels. I worked at Bed Bath & Beyond for 2 years in high school.
Why don't people love this place so much? It is so overpriced.
Oh, like, dude. Ridiculous. Listen, let me tell you something. After working at Bed Bath & Beyond, I developed this aversion to smells. I can't even walk into a fucking Bed Bath & Beyond anymore without getting a headache and wanting to throw up, man. All that. Yeah. I hate all that shit. The deodorant I wear doesn't smell. Nothing I have. Like, I'm one of those weird people. And I think I got like some kind of like chemicalized at fucking Bed Bath & Beyond. I folded 50,000 of those towels. I never knew about that though. Maybe it wasn't around 25 years ago.
Then they have like the coupon, the 20% off coupon, but you can only use it on one item, which is like, are you kidding me? Yeah, everything here is overpriced. Like
it was like terrible, dude.
I bought sheets there. And actually my mother, who's cheaper than I am, she was like, she's like, Sean, you go to like Marshall's for sheets. You don't go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I mean, I bought sheets on sale for $60 there. And they're like, you know, I was like, man, I want some nice sheets for the first time in my life. That's like the only thing that I have is like nice sheets. So I got high thread count. Like I got a high thread count sheet and they're wonderful. And you know what? I swear within 60 days of buying these sheets, the pillowcase, like the stitching started to unravel. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I don't sew. So it's just sitting there like that now.
Oh,
it's going to be like that until I get a new pair of sheets.
that's tough to take. Don't pull on it.
Or if I start dating like a really older woman who loves to sew.
You could. Well, she doesn't have to be older. Why don't you learn to sew? I used to love sewing when I was back in school. Back in what was that called?
I don't have time to learn to sew. Like
you could do it.
Oh man.
All right, let's get back to the show. That was a neat digression on towels though. And thread count. I've never bought sheets. My wife bought them.
You're missing out on high thread count.
I'll look into it. So now there's a point here too that I wanted to bring up real quick just for those paying attention. SWAT says no stone fruit. He makes this big thing about having a list and no stone fruit. That does not come up again in this episode, but I'm betting that's going to come up again because Larry, of course, has to come back with what? I can't eat a stone fruit? Now, he's probably never even eaten one, and he's going to go out and buy one just to try it, and then he's going to fall in love with them, and SWAT's going to die. So Buck Dancer returns to the hotel. We get more Jim Rash. He starts talking because he wants to get his pajamas, and Larry brings it all the way back to episode one by mentioning the obfuscation, I can't pronounce this, of the penis. Remember like the penis tent?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a callback all the way to the first episode of Curb. Remember that?
Yep, with the pants tent. Yeah.
So Larry gets into it with the cookie lady, who's Claudia. Didn't recognize her from anything. Did you recognize her from anything?
No.
That's good to see, though. I like give some new people a head start here. Get them on curb. Now, this is where it really was reminding me of the double dipping, because she drops the tongs and picks up the tongs, you know? And then Larry, this is like such a George moment, right? You see how he was George. And he's just like, oh, it doesn't even matter. She wiped them. She did the wipe. I thought this little thing was funny. And again, I was kind of surprised that Jim Rash wasn't more over the top, but that was pretty cool.
Yeah. She barely wiped them. She like grazed her apron with them.
Tongs are nasty, dude.
I'm anti-tongs. I'm anti-tongs.
No, me too. I'm anti-tong. So now we jump to Larry's at Funkhauser's. They're arguing. And then this was such a strange scene, because Funkhauser just starts going off about how he knows the kid is frustrated because he can't jerk off. And it was so strange to me, but it's Curb, so I bought it. And then he asks him, and they start talking about going left, that you need the rotation, the feel, the tempo. You can't go left. Sean, can you go left?
I'm a righty through and through.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I don't know. You
can't do anything left-handed. Like I hold my phone left-handed, but that's it.
I wipe my ass with my left hand.
Ooh, are you righty?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You wipe your ass with your right hand?
I sure do.
I wipe my hand.
It's my dominant hand.
See, I was taught to wipe my ass with my left hand because you shake a person's hand with your right. I'm telling you, I remember this from when I was a kid.
Oh my God.
Is that fucking weird?
That is totally weird.
Maybe my mom or my dad made up some weird shit about wiping my ass and I just bought it.
I mean, theoretically, you shouldn't get any shit on your hand to begin with. So that's not the problem. And it's your dominant hand. You want to make sure you get everything. Okay. I mean, this may sound disgusting, but I was like, the other day I was like, man, I wish I had a bidet. Like, you know,
because, oh, I'd love one. I'd love it.
You know, sometimes like, you know, there's stuff back there and you don't even know it.
Dude, it's not proper. You gotta wipe your ass like a Muslim. I learned from my boy Afu. You put some water on the ass. You know what I'm saying, dude? That's why if you go into a Muslim house, they have, in America, I don't know. That's what Afu always told me. You see like a watering can. Right. And a lot of times that's like to do the bidet. You put a little in the ass or a little on the toilet paper or something like that. You get some water going there. Yeah. You know, the dry wipe is not, it's not good, dude. The dry wipe.
Now they have dude wipes now, which are totally like these flushable.
I'm down.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try that. Maybe like, you know, this podcast could take off and we could get like dude wipes on board as a sponsor.
All right, man. I'm going to send him an email.
I would love that.
I'm doing it. All right. So we jump ahead and Larry and Leon. Oh, no. What happens is Larry gets the idea. I'm going to get the kid a prostitute. And of course, Funkhauser has no issue with this, but he didn't like Leon asking about a titty.
But it's his nephew.
Yeah.
It's his nephew. I would love to get my nephew a prostitute.
I don't know. If he wanted one, depends. I don't know how I feel about that.
He needed one. Well, at the very least, you know, I want to be there when he goes to his first titty bar.
Really? That's not something I've ever thought about. That's so funny.
That's what uncles are for. Like,
you are such a dirty. You're like the dirty uncle. See, you're the dirty uncle, and I'm like, I want to be like the uncle that like gives him like the autobiography of Malcolm X. That's the uncle I want to be.
Hey, did you know? I'm actually reading that book right now.
It's fantastic. You know fantastic. Yeah, man.
It's a great, great book.
It's beautiful
about the civil rights.
Yeah,
man. But I'm a really slow reader. But I plan on finishing that book by any means necessary.
That you got, that's really good, dude. All right. So we got the plan. We're going to get the hooker. What's going to happen next? Larry has to go talk to the hooker. All right. So what does that mean? They got to run what they're going to call the Pickle Gambit. This means that Leon is going to go into the hotel and somehow, just by holding a pickle jar, he's going to create a big enough distraction for Larry to run past the front guards, we'll call them, find Paula the prostitute. And I like that when I found that her name was Paula the prostitute, because it's what's that called when it's like the words have alliteration. Mm-hmm. I like alliteration. So Leon wants a name. He gets a name, which I think is going to play into Curb from now on, which is Choppy Johnson.
Yeah. He said, I can't remember exactly how it went down, but he was going to give him another name.
Yeah. He was going to give him a white guy's name. He's like, I want that name, Larry. And that's why Larry gave him a player from the Negro League called Choppy Johnson. And then so Leon walks into the hotel and he says, my name is Choppy Johnson and I can't open this pickle jar.
Yeah, that was perfect.
That was so obvious and funny, though. That was perfect.
People were jumping out of their chairs. Like, oh, let me get that.
Which is funnier in retrospect. When it was happening, now I'm laughing. But when it was happening, I don't know. It just seemed weird to me. I don't know, but. So it worked. Larry goes and he sees Paula. And of course, she's dressed nicely. Larry says it's a hooker mitzvah, which I thought was great. On the way back, Larry notices. Actually, he kind of gets distracted. He sees what's happening and he gets distracted, which leads me to believe that there is a scene missing here. I wanted to bring that up. Because what happens is Larry sees what's happening. He gets distracted, right? He tells her, I'll be right back. He goes out there, and this is when obviously he can't help himself but to open the pickle jar. He opens it, and it's either between going, and this was another weird thing where it's like, is he going to go to run after Ted and Cheryl? Or is he going to open the pickle jar? It was like, which one was more important to him? It was almost like a test of his masculinity in a way.
Yeah.
I almost felt like this was like some high comedy here when you look deeper into it.
Wait, I just want to ask you something. Where do you think that a scene was missing?
Oh, okay. I think there's a scene missing where Larry gets thrown out and somehow has to sneak back and tell the hooker where he lives.
Oh.
Because okay. He said he was going to come back and tell her, right?
Yeah.
In this show, we see people's whole conversation. We can assume that, right? We as an audience assume. But the way it's shot and edited and everything, that's the whole conversation, right? We always see people come and we see them leave. That's kind of a hallmark of this show, right? So I think that there was a scene missing here.
It could be true. Cause he got distracted by Ted and Cheryl,
yep,
who did not recognize him.
I think Cheryl did. I think we're going to find out that she recognized him.
For a second, I thought she might have, but yeah, and then he just like, I'll be right back.
That was great, dude. That part was funny. So let's see what happens. All right, so now Larry's been thrown out. Obviously, he opened the pickle jar. And we're at, we see Paula the prostitute is in the hallway with Little Funk. They're going into the bedroom. We go downstairs. Larry's talking to Funkhauser, and Funkhauser admits that he took Cheryl out like 5 times, but didn't tell Larry. And the way this unfolded, I like this. This was funny.
I called her twice, and he was like, I just had some questions. You know, we just had coffee once, and 2 dinners, and a walk in the park.
It was good.
I shouldn't have told you.
But then when he said, "I went behind your back," Larry's like, "Yeah, that is the better way." What do you think about this? Have you ever believed in like this quote unquote bro code of where like you don't date your friend's ex or anything like that? What do you think about that?
Yes. I definitely believe in that. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really had any instances. Usually my friends have a way of making me hate their girlfriends. So
really,
there's no reason for me to ever date them.
Well, you know, I think it kind of goes both ways. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's any, you know, but I do appreciate, I'm a person who believes in communication. So I think there's nothing wrong with it. It's staying on the safe side, you know? So actually, I like the Ted Danson way rather than the Funkhauser way.
Yeah.
I'd be more like Ted Danson. I'd be straight up and be like, "Hey, look, I'm going to ask her out on a date. Like, I just wanted you to know."
Yeah, you know, but don't get offended. Well, like it shouldn't happen though. I kind of like, maybe I do believe in the bro code.
See, I don't believe in that. If someone ever wanted to date one of my friends wanted to ever date any of my ex-girlfriends, I would have said, as long as some time had passed, you know, I would be like, "Of course, dude, you're my friend. I care for," unless of course there was something bad and I was going to be like, "Dude, what the fuck are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. We're getting too into this. Let's move on." I don't actually think about like real life shit here.
But you don't want to see your ex after they're your ex. And so if your friend brings them back around, it's like,
nah, I'm friends, man. I'm friends with a lot of my ex-girlfriends. Actually, I'm friends with pretty much all of them.
No, you're a better man than I.
See, Sean, once I let someone into my heart, they're in my heart, baby. That's the way I am. All right. So, the final scene, Larry, this scene, it just didn't work for me. The way it was shot, I mean, the way it was positioned, it was just, I know everything in this show is obvious. They're not trying to trick you, but I just felt that it didn't work out. He's talking to the console. He still is like, he still can't help but say bad shit and kind of insult him when he talks about tongs. You know, he's like, "I didn't think Iranians would invent the tong." What the fuck does that mean?
Well, it's sort of like, who was his friend, Bob Cobb? Remember Bob Cobb?
Yeah.
He's like, "My grandfather invented the Cobb cell." No way. Your grandpa, but it's sort of like the same thing. He's like, "No, I don't believe that, the Iranians invented the tong. Like, I just don't," but they didn't dwell on it too much. But the cool thing is, even though they brought it back once, maybe in a future episode, for some reason, I feel like he could end up going to Iran this season.
I agree. Like, yes, totally.
The tongs are going to be like, you know, there'll be like a tong museum or something.
All right. Well, look, while we're talking, I decided to look up who invented the tong. And, all it says is it goes back to the Bronze Age. I can't verify who invented the tong. So it's quite possible that Iranians invented the tong, man. We'll have to check it out. It's super important, I know. So now it is funny when, of course, it turns out that the console loves Seinfeld. They talk about the puffy shirt. And I like the way Larry does that fake thing when he's like, "Yeah, it's so good." You know, like whenever someone mentions Seinfeld on Curb and mentions some episode or some part of it, he always kind of like pretends that he's happy they're mentioning it.
Yeah.
Now we have the same thing happen again. Of course, SWAT thinks Larry's in trouble, but it's Little Funk. They run down the stairs. The console sees it all. And I didn't get this the first time, what Leon was saying, but he was making reference to Shara when he said, "Just get rid of the Muslims."
Yes.
I didn't get that at first.
And that's what the consulate heard.
Yeah, exactly. I only got that upon the second watch. So I think if I had gotten that, maybe it would have landed a little bit, but, I don't know. This last scene, it just wasn't one of the best. It was still funny, but it wasn't one of the best. It felt forced.
It was too obvious for you. It was definitely, I was like, oh, they're going to run down the stairs. Like I knew, I mean, I wasn't totally like, I didn't think like Leon and SWAT were going to do all that. But I thought that like, maybe they would like the prostitute would run out or something like that. Something would happen between the kid and the prostitute and he'd run down the stairs and be like, what the hell is that? And, yeah, it was like too easy to see. You could see it coming. And so when you can see it coming, you don't appreciate as much. And that's sort of like the thing with comedy is that like your punchline needs to be something that people can't see is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. You like earlier where you totally got me with that joke you told earlier. That was very funny.
That, autobiography of Malcolm X joke.
Yes, that was amazing, dude. That was perfect. Yeah. I've been telling
that joke for like 10 years.
That was great. Dude. That was really great. And you set it up with the slow reader. See, dude, you got to be writing for Curb, man. They could use you. I think, but it was still great. It was still funny. I saw it coming so far in advance because I saw it coming from just a director's eye and a cameraman that that's where you'd have to put the camera, you know? So you can see Larry, you can cut back to the guy and still see over his shoulder, right? So you're actually shooting for two shots. Okay. So I could see that the whole positioning. And I was just thinking, okay, what is going to come down the stairs? Is it going to be a naked woman? And then I thought it would just be funnier if like the kid came down with like a huge hard on, like his dick was huge, you know, and he comes running down the steps with, and like SWAT is like running from him. You know what I mean? I thought that would have been funny, but then I was like, how are they going to have, like he would have to have a tremendous member. But then I was thinking, it's like they had to do too much for it to work. The girl had to come down to be insulting, and then Leon had to yell the Muslim part for the kicker, right? And you're like, you're saying, you're seeing the what do they say again? You're just like kind of seeing the sausage getting made in front of you.
Yeah,
and it just didn't work as well. But it was still a decent episode of Curb. There were some great moments.
Yeah, some great moments, some great lines. I mean, for me, like some of the premises like really hit home.
Yeah,
like I like the well dressed prostitute is like so up my alley. And I love how it was like Saks. He was like, "You gotta go to Saks."
Yeah,
man. And it's just like, that's like a callback to other episodes too, because isn't that where him and Mary Sternberger originally went shopping? Or was it Barney's? It might have been Barney's.
I don't remember.
I don't know, but it's just so funny. It, like, to me, I mean, like, oh, you gotta go Saks. And then at the end, he commented. Remember at the end, the kid commented? He's like, I like your dress. She's like, oh, thanks so much. I got it at Saks.
I think that he may have, I think there may be some times where he has said that to Susie.
Okay.
Where he's been like, oh, you got it at Saks, you know, like that. I think she may have said something like that. So, we'll probably look that up. There's probably some Curbopedia or something like that where you can put in a word and I'll tell you what episode it was mentioned in. All right, man. Anything you want to say as we wrap this up?
No, I think I'm looking forward to this week, which is only a couple of days away. So hopefully, we'll get an episode out a little earlier next week.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, guy. I was a little under the weather, but a day late, but not a dollar short.
Yeah, but I think it'll be interesting. And it's just like, man, we're already like 20% of the way there.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I like how, I definitely appreciate how you got that Ted Danson thing. So I'm interested to see like how many of your guesses turn right.
We'll see, man. I like looking at shows like that. I mean, it doesn't, harm my viewing. I'm kind of a prognosticator, but it's also because I'm a writer and a director. And that's just like, I can't not see that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's
when
just
people
part
tell
of
jokes
it.
On stage, I try to guess their punchlines. Yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly, dude. I will watch films and I can tell you where the camera's going to be when they cut. And yeah. I love do, and it just comes natural to me because when I watch moving images, I watch it as a creator, you know? Yeah. So it's like I'm trying to learn from it too. And man, you can learn a lot from Curb. Cool. So, hey, everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate you downloading. You can follow us on Twitter at Curb Your Podcast. You can also email us, curbyourpodcast@gmail.com. We really would appreciate if you go on iTunes and give us a review. It's really important when new podcasts start to get a bunch of reviews. So help us out if you like the show. We appreciate it. You can also help us out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/DVR. My name is Axel. You can check us out at DVRpodcast.com. On behalf of Sean, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.